Gonna go to the place that's the best. Gonna go up to the spirit in the sky. Going up to the spirit in the sky. That's where I'm gonna go, to the spirit in the sky. The spirit in the sky.
Well, Melbourne University's Spirit Satellite was launched last December. Not long after, the Melbourne Space Laboratory announced that all of the payloads were operational. In January, the Spirit team said that they had successfully demonstrated the Stirling Cycle Cryocooler, which is part of the satellite's thermal management integrated system. In April, the university team said that commissioning activities on Spirit were progressing positively, with all of their systems staying healthy after more than 135 days in space. The team said that a scientific paper on the LORIS camera and the artificial intelligence system had been accepted for publication and presentation at a conference in Seattle this coming June. Although the paper did not show it, the university announcement had a picture taken on March the 31st of the Black Sea coastline. The native 8-megapixel resolution image was compressed to just over 60 kilobytes for download. On May the 13th, the Melbourne Space Laboratory said that Spirit's payload management system, that's what controls the satellite's instruments, had survived the severe geomagnetic storm that caused global aurorae. The system had operated for a near-continuous six-hour period. It did experience a single anomaly about 3 hours into the test. The anomaly is attributed to a radiation event. The system was automatically recovered by the onboard watchdog through a system reboot. Now, operations resumed autonomously after the recovery. All other payloads on Spirit were kept powered off during the solar storm as a precautionary measure. Operations for subsystems controlled by the payload management system recommenced after the storm subsided.
Gonna go to the place that's the best. Gonna go up to the spirit in the sky. Going up to the spirit in the sky. That's where I'm gonna go, to the spirit in the sky. The spirit in the sky.
In the United States, there has been, going back to 1959, a tradition of assigning a nickname for each astronaut class. For example, the 1959 Group 1 were the Mercury 7. 1962's Group 2 were the New 9, because there were nine astronauts in that group. 1967's Group 6 were the XS 11. And you can guess how many astronauts were in that group. And 1984's Group 10 were the Maggots, and so on. Now, NASA's latest group, which is Group 23, and they were selected in 2021, are known as the Flies. And they graduated their training in March this year. Not surprising, then, that the Europeans have adopted this practice of having group nicknames. Astronaut Alexander Gerst explains the origin of the nickname for the European Space Agency class of 2022, that is, and they're at what astronauts.
I pass the mic to Alex. Alex has a special role. Alex has been the mentor, he has been the leader, he has been the boss of this class of 2022. He has helped them a lot through, at least when I talked to you, you all were very happy with the leadership that Alex provided to this class. So, Alex, the floor is yours.
Flying to space is a serious business, and training to fly to space as well. Therefore, as an astronaut, you try to find some moments in between to meet this with a little humor, of course. And that's, by the way, how our class of 2009 got the name the Shenanigans. That's a different story today. But you can already see that that the business of naming an astronaut class is a not so serious business, and it's based on some of the characteristics of the class that you meet before. So the tradition is that the old class, or the existing class, I would say, gives the name to the new class, and that's the tradition. So about a year ago, a new phenomenon has been observed at EAC. It's called hopping, I guess. Well, we had a few new colleagues hopping around between the classroom, which is on this side, to their offices, which is on that side, to spend 7 minutes there and then back, and that happened about 12 times a day. Then we had stray kangaroos with space helmets being observed hopping around in various parts of the building. And I also learned that kangaroos only hop forward. And then some of our new colleagues have been overheard mentioning that they would be interested in hopping around on the moon. It's for these reasons, and a few more that I will not share today, that the name of the astronaut class of 22 from ESA is called the Hoppers. So from now on, the core of active astronauts at ESA will consist of shenanigans and hoppers training and working hand in hand to fly to space for Europe.
The Hoppers graduated on April the 22nd this year. Now, as you may have gathered from Alexander Gerst's comments, if you didn't already know, Australian Catherine Bennell Pegg was one of the six members of the Hoppers. Enrico Palermo, the head of the Australian Space Agency, was in attendance at the graduation ceremony at the European Astronaut Centre in Cologne, Germany. Palermo was invited to speak by the Director General of the European Space Agency, Joseph Aschbacher.
So now we have a special way of handing over the next certificate through Enrico Palermo, the head of the Australian Space Agency, who will do the honours of handing over the certificate to Catherine Bennell Pegg. Enrico, please.
Thank you, Joseph. Ministers, VIPs, distinguished guests, esteemed colleagues, good morning. And to the many Australians watching back home, good evening. What an absolute privilege to be here on this historic occasion to bear witness to the graduation of the new generation of space explorers. Sophie, Pablo, Rosemary, Rafaela, Marco, congratulations on your graduation and being excellent representatives of your nations, and for being a teammate, a hopper teammate with Catherine. As Joseph signaled in his remarks, today is historic. Our own Catherine Bennell Pegg becomes the first qualified career astronaut under the Australian flag. We know the astronaut club is very exclusive, and we've had representatives from down under, NASA astronauts, Dr. Andy Thomas and Dr. Paul Scully Power. But today, Catherine does that proudly with the Australian flag on her sleeve for the first time. I congratulate Catherine on this exceptional effort to achieve this milestone and for being an exemplary ambassador for Australia on the international stage. We are naturally all very proud of Catherine at the Australian Space Agency and back in Australia. We're even prouder that her training has opened doors that will further grow our local space ecosystem and our collaboration with ESA. Catherine has said on many occasions that being an astronaut is a team sport, and she has represented Team Australia brilliantly. So Catherine will return to Australia, a qualified astronaut, brimming with knowledge, insights and connections that will help generate opportunities for our industry to contribute to the generation-defining global missions that are in the coming years. She will do this at a time that Australia's space industry is rapidly maturing, followed by the formation of our agency about 6 years ago, but importantly because of the open arms we've had from our international partners to collaborate. That's been instrumental to the growth of our sector. So I would like to thank the team at ESA for making this training happening, in particular the vision and leadership of the Director General and the entire team here at the European Astronaut Centre. Every single one of you, and there's 300 of you, have been gracious with your space expertise, sharing the rich knowledge that exudes every part of this centre with the passion and professionalism we all see. And you've been generous in your time in hosting Australian delegations to foster and unlock new collaborations with Europe. Catherine's training has strengthened the deep relationship between Europe and Australia, more than a relationship, a partnership, a friendship that has spanned decades and has been of great mutual benefit. So we look forward to Australia and Europe working together into the future, knowing the perseverance of one of our talented own has paved the way for much more collaboration. Catherine, you have shown young Aussie kids back home the power of a dream and what can come from hard work and determination and the pursuit of education and careers in STEM. And that alone makes you an excellent addition to that exclusive club. Thank you, and thank you to ESA.
And now I would like to ask Catherine Bennell-Beck on stage. Congratulations, Catherine.
And Catherine was awarded her astronaut wings and a patch that symbolised the group that she now belongs to, the Hoppers. And I must correct Enrico Palermo. In addition to Paul Scully Power and Andrew Thomas, Melbourne-born Philip Chapman was also a NASA astronaut, selected in 1967 during the Apollo program. He was one of the XS-11 group. Unlike Scully Power and Thomas, Chapman did not make a spaceflight, although he did serve as ground-based mission scientist on the Apollo 14 moon landing mission. And when will Catherine get to fly in space? Well, perhaps Elton John knows.
Well, I think it's gonna be a long, long time. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time.
And I think... And it's also been a long, long time for the Australian Space Agency to issue Gilmore Space a launch licence for the Queensland company's Eris orbital rocket. Now, Gilmore had been targeting a launch in April and had their rocket on the launch pad in Bowen all ready to go. Well, given that the Space Agency is unlikely to issue the permit before mid-June, and that an extra 30 days will elapse while the agency notifies governments of the impending launch, don't expect Eris to fly before mid-July. And by the way, if you are in Helensville, where Gilmore is based, keep an eye out for two human tongues. They will belong to the brothers Adam and James Gilmore, bitten off in their attempts to say something positive about the delays at the space agency. Oh, and it's been a long, long time waiting for Boeing's Starliner crew flight test. The Starliner CST-100 has been tentatively rescheduled to launch not before Sunday, June the 2nd at 2:25 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. When contracted by NASA to build the Starliner in September of 2014, yes, 10 years ago, at a price of $4.2 billion, the first manned flight was supposed to be in 2017. Contrast this with SpaceX, who agreed at the same time to build their Crew Dragon for $2.6 billion and flew their first manned mission on 2020, May the 30th. Since then, Crew Dragon has flown 12 crewed flights. And we still await Boeing's first manned flight. Perhaps it'll be a long, long time.